to me. Oh, oh, I
live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to talk about, and we're going to begin with a discussion on health and healing, living a longer, more vital life. We're going to look at Queen Mary University from the United Kingdom study on vitamin D, increasing your muscle strength, and also how to keep older muscles strong with just two nutrients and the foods from which those nutrients derive. How a sedentary lifestyle is linked to depression, and a whole lot more on health. Then I'm going to share with you my own particular insights of what I believe we ideally, you have to go from the ideal to the practical, but somewhere between practical and ideal, you have a way of having a platform from which you can make responsible and reasonable choices in everything in life. And then I'm going to compare these ideals to Bernie Sanders and to Hillary Clinton's. So for those who are going to vote for Hillary, know what you're actually voting for. Yes, she's the first Democratic presidential nominee. Oh, no, she isn't. There was one before her. At least someone from a major party, but let's give them the benefit of saying first woman president. Okay, what does that mean? We had our first black president. We know what that means. Everything he promised, he reneged on. How do we feel about that? Look at Bill Clinton, more popular than ever today. If he were to run for president today, he would win in a landslide against just anybody. And yet look at what the man did in office. Look how it impacted people. So what is this sociopathology where we get so enamored by a person's personality that we choose not to look at the substance of their character? So I'll deal with that. Also, I will share with you a platform for progressive politicians that I believe what we should hold as this is our standard. If you want our vote, you have to support this. And we're going to watch it. So once you're in office, you don't flip-flop. And I'll share that. Also, some people have said, why haven't you had Gary Johnson on? Well, I invited Gary on. Hopefully he will come on. But if he doesn't, I went to his website and we pulled off all of the statements that he supports. And I'll share those. What I would consider really remarkably good and what I would consider really regressive. So we have those to share. From our audio file today, a nurse warns of biologics and forced flu vaccine shots happening in U.S. hospitals. This is a nurse whistleblower, so describing her experience inside a hospital taking orders to unknowingly force vaccinate patients with the flu shot. Later, she describes what this means. We will also look at why can't the U.S. quit Iraq? You keep hearing the people like John McCain and Bill O'Reilly say, if only we would have stayed there. We were there. And all we did, the longer we stayed, is created more divisiveness, more sectarian violence. 93% of Iraqis see the United States as their enemy. Let's take a look at the history and then ask, can you blame them? Also, Roland Martin calls out Bill O'Reilly on Bill's vow to, challenge Black Lives Matter. And also for those of you who think our government would never intentionally or knowingly submit young children as young as five to brainwashing. Yeah, they did. And they were caught. October 11th, 1977, clandestine operations of the CIA regarding its interest in children, young kids. So when people say, gee, you can't be serious that the CIA for decades has been behind controlling regimes in the Middle East and infiltrating every one of their organizations, including in Turkey, which led to the coup. They had sponsored the coup, but then it backfired. Yeah. Yeah. They do anything, everything, and get away with it. But when you mess with kids' brains and then walk away from an experiment, what do you think happens when those kids grow up? You'll hear about this, and you've never heard this before. So that's what we're taking on today, issues that are important in every realm of our lives. But we start with our lifestyle. Regrettably, the average American is very sedentary. And when you're sedentary, meaning when you're sitting for more than 2 hours at a time, there's a problem. Circulation, big problem. Now just look at when you're sitting. Even if you're sitting in correct position, your anatomy means that your thigh goes out and then you hit your knees and then straight down. That causes a bend in the veins. And that means you've got poor circulation in the extremities. And that means your feet and your ankles and your calves. It's just one example of what we don't think about when we cross our legs, when we sit, put one leg on top of the other, which is very common. That also crimps the circulation, and it also changes the rhythm, the dynamic rhythm between the left side and right side of the brain. Not good. Never cross your legs when you're sitting. But it goes far beyond that. This is from University Medical College of the Qingdao in China. They did an analysis, a detailed analysis of what happens when you lie around, you're working on your computer, you're watching television. They're saying you greatly increase your risk of depression. Quote, based upon dozens of studies covering hundreds of thousands of participants, the research found that sedentary behavior was linked to a 25% higher likelihood of being depressed compared to those who were not sedentary. So get up and move around, exercise, go for walks on a regular basis. Even in my lectures, every hour, I'll stop and ask people to stand and take a stretch because I want good circulation. So there are dozens and dozens of studies that prove that. Also, the more sedentary you are, the more weight you're going to gain. The more weight you gain, the more likely you are to become pre-diabetic, diabetic, heart disease, cancer. All those are going to increase. So what do you do if you haven't done a lot of exercise and your muscles are not in the best of shape? They're rather flaccid. Well, good news, and this was University of Iowa. Here's what it says in their study. As we grow older, we lose strength and muscle mass. The cause of age-related muscle weakness and atrophy has remained a mystery. Scientists at the University of Iowa have discovered the first example of a protein that causes muscle weakness and loss during aging. The protein ATF4 is a transcription factor that alters gene expression in skeletal muscle, causing reduction in the muscle protein synthesis, reduction in strength, and reduction in muscle mass. But here's the good news, and this was published in the Journal of Biological Chemistry. They found that there are two things you could do that could make a difference. And what are those two things? Simple. Eating apples. Yeah. The apple peel specifically, and also eating green tomatoes. Why? Because evidently there are special chemicals, what is called ursolic acid, ursolic, S-O-L-I-C, acid, is found in the apple peel, as well as what is called tomatidine. And that is a chemical that's inside the green tomato. And these real small molecules can prevent acute muscle wasting. And that would be important for people who are in hospice care, hospitals, nursing homes, sedentary people, people who may be wheelchair bound or bed bound for some form of illness, or people who've just been lazy and now want to start getting active. All of what I just mentioned causes muscle atrophy, muscle weakness, and this, what I would suggest, would help remedy some of that. Take four apples, peel them, organic apples, throw those apples into a blender. Now take some green tomatoes, two, and dice them up, throw them in the blender. Throw in a little cayenne. Throw in some coenzyme Q10. Throw a teaspoon of creatine monohydrate. Throw a little bit of D-ribose, like an eighth of a teaspoon. Throw some branched-chain amino acids, maybe four branched-chain amino acids. Put in your favorite liquid, blend it up into a smoothie, and if you don't like the flavor, add something. You know, add some banana, add some strawberry, something that gives you a flavor. Because when you drink that down, you're doing a lot to help your muscles develop muscle strength, muscle mass, and that's what you want. But it also helps if you did push-ups, curls with light weights, because you really should, with branched-chain amino acids, you want to do a little muscle work, and then that gets into your muscles and expands the protoplasm. So this is brand new information on atrophying and how we can reverse it and help people. Good for them, University of Iowa. Also from the Sapienza University in Italy, they found that olive oil improves metabolic and cardiovascular parameters. The unrefined, cold-pressed olive ends up with olive oil. It's abundant in the monounsaturated fat. And they found that, wow, having that each day, and not a lot, we're only talking about 10 grams, that's about 2 teaspoons of extra virgin organic olive oil, it makes an enormous difference. It can stabilize your blood sugar, keeping it from rising in post-meal. And that's when most people's blood sugar rises after a meal. And it can help protect your heart. All good. And vitamin D also increases muscle strength, according to study at Queen Mary University in the United Kingdom. And this was a study of hundreds of adults from 21 to 31 years of age. They found that if you were to take vitamin D 4,000 units a day and up to maximum of 60,000 units per week and there were 7 separate trials that you could quote. The review has found that vitamin D3 supplementation improves upper and lower limb muscle strength in healthy adult athletic and non-athletic populations between the ages of 18 and 40. And this was published in the Journal of Science, Medicine, and Sport. There were 2 studies. Another study suggested that for 4 months you take between 60,000 and 14,000 units on the downside per week, and you would have benefits like that as well. It's all good. Vitamin D is just one of the most miraculous nutrients we can take. And finally, from the Federal University of Vicosa, which is down in Brazil, carotenoids lower lipid oxidation and DNA damage in middle-aged men. What does that mean? It means if you're a middle-aged man, let's just for argument's sake say middle age is 50. It's actually less. It's 40, but we'll say 50. It's actually less than 40. Middle age today would be 37. Believe it or not, today, because of how many things we're doing wrong, that's middle age. Well, what they did was they found that when you're taking the carotenoids, and you can get the carotenoids from a lot of different vegetables, carrots, for example, and green vegetables, red, yellow, purple, sweet peppers. You can get your carotenoids, celery, you can get them. And you're getting a lot of other nutrients as well. There are 5 carotenoids types, like lycopene from watermelon and tomatoes and red raspberries. Anything red, that's your lycopene. And lutein, and zeaxanthin, and B-carotenoid, and A-carotenoid, and cryptococcus, These are all carotenoids, and they are really good at slowing down free radicals, the bad elements that attack your cells and cause damage. So every time you have a glass of juice, you're flooding your body with carotenoids. When you have some legumes, split peas and dal soup and black-eyed peas, you're having, you know, protecting your cells. Vegetables, you protect your cells. A glass of vegetable juice, a glass of fruit juice, you're protecting your cells. It's all good. One more thing that we're finding, one more piece of the puzzle, slowing down the aging process and preventing the diseases that are common with it. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break and come back, and we're going to listen to something you've never heard before about how our CIA, you know, the ones that are completely a criminal organization, never had held accountable for anything ever, starting, you know, regime change, engages in assassination, rendition. They are totally corrupt, evil organization. Anyway, I'll show you how evil they are. They were experimenting with kids. Don't believe me? Back in a moment. Hear for yourself.
Activities of the CIA in years past, some of them disturbing, to say the least. Tonight, we'll learn of the agency's interest in children. Paul Altmaier of our investigative unit has assembled these facts.
These are home movies taken in the 1950s at a European camp of the Children's International Summer Village, a program designed to bring together children from around the world for a better understanding of one another. NBC News has learned that the CIA was studying these youngsters, some as young as 11, as possible future recruits. The studies took place at summer camps in Hammerfest, Norway and Vienna, Austria in 1959 and 1960. According to CIA documents we have examined, this was sub-project 103 of the agency's top-secret MK-Ultra program. San Antonio, Texas. NBC News has also learned that the CIA paid for a study of adolescents here, and in two other Texas cities, Austin and El Paso, in 1958 and 1959. It was a study of how youngsters behave without adult supervision. This study, MKUltra Subproject 102, refers to data being collected on 462 subjects in seven secondary schools. No child is identified by name.
Most revered child psychiatrist in the entire 20th century of American psychiatry was Dr. Loretta Bender. She had a full-page obituary in the American Journal of Psychiatry, and that only happens occasionally. You have to be really a high-ranking person to have a full-page obituary. And she's famous for the Bender Gestalt test, which is a widely used psychological test. So not everybody in the mental health field knows exactly who she is, but all psychology graduate students have heard of the Bender Gestalt. And she was a child psychiatrist charged with the care and treatment of children. And she operated at Creedmoor State Hospital in New York in the 60s. Her funding source is not stated in her papers. So where she got the LSD from and whether she was directly funded by the military or the CIA is not documented. But she attended many CIA-sponsored LSD symposia, talked with, was on panels with, interacted with most of the leading CIA and military LSD contractors. So I would say it's unbelievable that she didn't know that all of this was basically run by the CIA and the military. And what she did, again, is not the mad scientist hidden in the basement somewhere. These are papers in leading psychiatry journals where she, as the author, describes children as young as five getting LSD, mescaline, psilocybin, other hallucinogens in street-level type doses for days, weeks, months, and in some cases years at a time. Under the rationale that somehow this was going to be helpful treatment. Again, no real follow-up. How many of these kids went psychotic? How did it affect their chromosomes? What was with their mental health from there on? So this is the kind of experimentation that you would think would be impossible. It would never happen. Somebody who claimed that would just be in need of treatment themselves. But not only is it documented, it was published in the literature, and nobody seemed to be upset. Nobody complained to the American Psychiatric Association. Nobody reported it to anybody. It was just business as usual.
The use of children in barbaric mind control experiments shows an evolution from the early behaviorists to the CIA mind doctors. Once the doctrine of national security had been invoked, ethical considerations received little or no attention. Almost anything could be justified by claiming the communists might be engaged in similar activities.
So there you have it. The CIA was using five-year-old children, giving them some extraordinarily dangerous drugs for the brain, not doing any follow-up. Some they kept on it for years, and all they had to do is say national security. And think of how many different administrations, how many different agencies of government, including the current one, will hide from us information that we should know about their dirty deeds. Now think of it a different way. Think of the idea that the fascist networks that are out there and the individuals representing the smiling face of fascism want to go after the people who discover these dirty deeds and expose them. Chelsea Manning, of course, and the others, Karakawa. These are people, Snowden, who had the courage to expose crimes against humanity. So instead of going after the perpetrators of those crimes, they went after the people who exposed them. What does that say about we as a society? Now, this leads me into the complete, total lack of ethics, morals, character values, any sense of rightness on part of the corporate liberal democratic community. We already know that Republican conservatives don't have any, but some people were under some misbegotten notion that, oh yeah, they're on our side. No, they're not. They're on their own side. Let me give you specifics. I want to compare Bernie Sanders to Hillary Clinton. Now that Bernie Sanders, instead of doing the right thing and running as an independent with Jill Stein, he then immediately capitulated. He said he would all along. And yet people just chose not to believe that. Example. Would you repeal the worst labor law, Taft-Hartley, which intrudes on freedom of speech? Bernie Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Would you halt nuclear energy? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Would you put a moratorium on genetically modified foods? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Would you repeal the DARC Act and mandate GMO labeling? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Would you bring up a national minimum wage of $15 or higher immediately? Sanders, yes. Clinton, only gradually. Would you reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Would you repeal Citizens United? Yes. Would you say no to the TTP and TTIP? Sanders, yes, I'll repeal it and say no to it, I should say. And Clinton first said no, she supports it. 44 messages that she sent during her years as Secretary of State, she supported it. Now, for political reasons only, she says, well, you know, I'll work on it. That means she would change a comma and say, I've made some adjustments, as she would get the heads of unions in that do not represent the American Union force. They only represent their own political and ideological and financial interest. Such corruption you cannot imagine. But she can then moniker her campaign pro-union. You're not pro-union. Not NAFTA shows you're not pro-union. GATT shows you're not pro-union. CATA shows you're not pro-union. You know, you supporting sweatshops through your being on the board of Walmart in China, in India, in Bangladesh. You're not pro-union, but it's very easy to say you're pro-union if you get a couple of those heads of unions on your side. I just wish we were honest about how corrupt some of the ideology is at the top of unions, and the poor rank and file don't have a lot of options. And then you have, would you legalize marijuana? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Universal health care? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Would you break up the big banks? Clinton, yes. Sanders, yes. Clinton has not given us her opinion. Would you repeal the Patriot Act? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Would you reduce prisons and inmates? Sanders, yes. Clinton, only incrementally. Should probably allow one person out who is 97 years old, and that's it. And then say, well, I let someone out. You got to understand how her pathology works. Would you free public and university education? Sanders, yes. And again, Clinton, you got to listen to how she talks. She doesn't say a thing about private colleges, doesn't say a thing about four-year or graduate schools, just the two-year schools. That's not all education. That's a tiny amount of it. Would you overhaul pharmaceutical pricing? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Would you expand Social Security? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Would you overhaul the national security surveillance system? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. Would you give us internet freedom? Sanders, yes. Clinton, no. So when you see the people coming in, Michelle Obama and who, by the way, Michelle Obama has more personal assistance that we're paying for than the last 10 presidents' wives combined. But no one seems to care because they like her. And after all, what counts today is how someone looks. Do they look presidential? Do they sound presidential? Doesn't make a bit of difference if they're clueless about everything else or actually anti the people. And so that's what you're going to get with Clinton. You're going to get more of Bill Clinton, more of George Bush. You're going to get more of Wall Street, more big industries, more nuclear, more coal, more gas hydrofracking, more selling off of our public land, more people in prison, more draconian laws, invasions of other countries, the destruction of Iran, a Cold War with China and Russia. So when everyone's having their happy, stupid moment and applauding like blathering idiots without any sense of history at all, just understand what you're getting, and that's fine. But do you understand that if you get it, we all get it. And some of us actually think. And that would exclude almost 90% of the people that I'm watching at either of these conventions. But where is Bernie Sanders not a progressive? And the Bernie people, the angels on his shoulders, should realize he's got a whole lot that he didn't tell you about. Example, he completely, unequivocally supports Saudi Arabia. Yeah, that means that by extension, he's supporting and enabling people who behead people, who are against gays, who are against freedom of women, any form of freedom for women. All women are in Saudi Arabia is a vehicle for children. That's it. They serve no function within their own determinist mindset. They're only an extension of what the male or patriarchy of a rabidly radical, extraordinarily destructive form of jihadist belief is, and that's Saudi Arabia. They are not warm and loving and kind. And yet they're the major sponsor of terrorism in the world. They were behind 9/11. And we're still loving them, giving them everything they want, weapons. They give us oil. We give them money. That's Bernie Sanders. Does Bernie want to reduce our $1.5 trillion a year in military defense? No. Wants to increase it. Does Bernie want to reduce the size of our overseas military bases? No. Does he want to normalize relations with Russia? No. Does Bernie oppose Israeli apartheid of the Palestinians? Absolutely not. Does Bernie want to cease aggression against China? No. Does Bernie want to stop NATO containment of Russia? No. So some things Bernie's for, good for him. He's on the right side, but an awful lot. Like Gary Johnson, he's got some good things, he's got some bad things. So what should those who believe in progressive ideals, what are some of the things that we believe in, that we demand our candidates support and watch them to make sure they don't dishonor the vote? And the only one doing it right now would be Jill Stein. Reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. Ban trading in all commodities that are necessary for life, meaning you cannot Wall Street, you cannot big traders, you cannot deal in food, land, water. These are commodities that should not be profited from while other people starve. We must stop all trading, outlaw trading in credit default swaps and all derivatives made null and void. We must close down the Federal Reserve and do an investigation to hold every former member of the Federal Reserve accountable for crimes against humanity, because they've done nothing but run a scam since 1913. We must declare a moratorium on all home foreclosures. No more homes can be foreclosed on. We must create a national food program to see that 16 million hungry children in the United States are fed. We must decriminalize being poor. We must close down every for-profit prison in America. We must no longer make it a crime to be homeless. We must de-ghettoize America's program of food distribution, bypassing all corporations and working directly with communities. We must create a program for reforestation, employing the youth to plant trees and hedgerows, and using skilled laborers to repair bridges, levees, waterways, gas mains. We must forgive all student debt. 100%, $1.2 trillion, it's gone. Now, once it's gone, it stays gone. You pay for your books, you pay for your room and board, but tuition is free if it's a state public institution. If it's a private program, if you want to go to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Columbia, then you pay. Whatever they choose to charge you and whatever you choose to engage, but that's between you, your right, your freedom of choice, and the institution. We also close down every payday loan in the country and forgive all their debt. We also make it a crime if you harass people who are poor, or you arrest people who cannot pay a bill and put them in a debtor's prison so you can profit off of them. We repeal the laws that prevent student loan holders from declaring bankruptcy. We support senior citizens with free community hospital service and food co-ops. We offer small businesses zero interest loans with no repayment for 2 years, providing that for each $1 million, up to $5 million they get, the business hires 5 employees at a living wage of at least $20 an hour. That would bring about 10 million new workers into the workforce. Close and decommission all nuclear power plants and shift investment to support geothermal, of which we have over 75,000 geothermal springs in America, solar and wind, and wave energy. Ban all private funding for all elections. Take every single penny out of every single election cycle. You vote based upon lottery. Anyone wants to run for an office? Fine. they have a form they have to fill out, which then is detailed because by category, it allows the person to say what they're for and what they're against. And we have a chance to study these. Then by lottery, these people come forward, they debate, they share their insights. And if we like them, right then and there, we say we like you or we don't. And then you get down to where you have just the final people. You put them on a one cycle only, meaning you can only run for public office once. You get 3 years. That's it. We also we demilitarize all of our forces around the world, close down all of our military bases. We cease all gas hydrofracking and offshore drilling. We close down the Federal Reserve, and we close down 15 of the 16 security departments, including especially the CIA. We reduce the budget of that remaining to just what it's needed, is about 20%. We allow all corporations that cannot be maintained through structural bankruptcy to go into a bankruptcy and no longer bail them out. No one gets bailed out. We eliminate the entire income tax system. We have a flat tax that every corporation must pay, eliminate the IRS, and therefore bring about $1.5 trillion in taxes that would not be there otherwise, and we no longer give any subsidies to any corporation. All farm subsidies gone. All oil, gas, all these others, all gone. We create a 1% tax on all Wall Street transactions, including all other algorithms. That would bring in over $1.2 trillion a year. We then do an outside independent audit of every bureaucracy to see if it's serving the public interest, if it's engaging in duplicity, if it's engaging in non-bid contracts. And from what I have seen, we could cut back all governmental agencies by a minimum of 50% and then have outside independent civilian oversight that supersedes the bureaucracy itself. So they can no longer feel that they can just have a job for life being incompetent and corrupt, and somehow we're supposed to pay for that. We must also stop the State Department from enforcing regime change and sponsoring genetically modified foods in other countries. We must ban all lobbying. No one's allowed to lobby anywhere for anything. Instead, people put up on a universal board by category what they support and what they don't, and that would be given to legislators so at least they have a pulse on what the public wants. And there could be advocates for the consumer, not for corporations. Create a universal health care plan, but for those who want a private health care program, let them have it, they pay for it, and it's out of their pocket. We don't subsidize it. Include in every school curriculum in America programs on disease prevention and health. And we should also acknowledge the dangers of depleted uranium in all conflict zones and go into those countries and start the removal of all that that has contaminated their country as much as we can. Disband the FDA, the USDA, the National Institutes of Health, the CDC, the National Institutes of Aging, the National Institutes of Mental Health, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease. These are all completely corrupt, inept organizations. And replace them with independent groups of scientists, physicians, and public health experts with oversight by lay groups so that if a drug is brought forward, that it is independently tested, and that there is no politics or profit involved in the allowance of any single thing into the American healthcare system. Allow no money or lobbying from any special interest groups into any federal agency. You make that a crime. Now, think of what it means when you're working two jobs that pay you under $10 an hour. You're working 80 hours a week. You still cannot keep up with your expenses. And then you have the prospect of not having enough food. You can't afford an advanced education. And yet we consider in America those people lazy. It's very easy to judge someone if you're not in their shoes. I think we should have a forum on what it means to be the average person. We need a national transportation system. Ours is just an abomination. We depend upon automobiles far too much. Instead of doing it right and having a national grid that allows for high speed and virtually, and today they can do it with low pollution from city to city and crisscrossing the country to get people so that you can get them there almost in the same time as if they were to fly safely and fast. They're doing it in other countries. We could do it. We really need a national geothermal initiative. The U.S. currently leads the world in geothermal output. However, more can be done to increase the percentage of exploiting this source of clean energy. Currently, there are only 19 larger geothermal plants producing 50 milliwatts or greater. And the majority of these are located in North California in the geyser regions, the world's largest dry steam field. And geothermal has a higher capacity factor of 92% compared to the nuclear, coal, and other renewable energies, and we're not using it. We need to make sure that all of our new buildings have some form of either let's say green in it, like solar, which will be subsidized. And I think that is so important. And we should have state bankings, like the Bank of North Dakota, which earns profits even after the meltdowns of the rest of the banks around the country, because it really works. And we need to give a tax break, a $2 tax break for every dollar corporate America spends to a national charity that is devoted 100% to de-ghettoizing all the areas that are rust belts or inner cities, go in there and rehabilitate them so that they are functional, usable, and a high-quality aesthetic and sustainable. We would be loaded with people, because who wouldn't want to give $2 if a $1 if you got $2 deduction? We also have $32 trillion stashed offshores in banks and tax havens. Give them a forgiveness, one-time 20% tax. That means we would be bringing $5 to $6 trillion back into the treasury, and they would get the use of their money in the United States. And also start closing down all of the legalize all drugs and empty out the prison system. Those are some progressive ideals that can be implemented if we understand why they are important and what it means to be against them. I'm Gary Knoll. Time for our Talk Back segment, your chance. Call in 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome everyone. Now, I want you to hear about what it means to be in a place that we should never have been in. We've never apologized for a minimum of 1 million and upwards of 1.5 million dead, displacement of over 6 million people, a nation that has been torn to pieces, massive amount of sectarian violence, exploitation by private corporations like Halliburton, and the neocons just salivating. Well, here's a different perspective on why 93% of Iraqis see the United States as their enemy. Please listen.
Ideological reasons aside, Iraq holds a key strategic location for the U.S., a location that's filled with oil resources, military bases, and pretty close allies. But that's meant different things over the decades. Let's start with 1980, when Iraq, under Saddam Hussein, launched a war against the newly minted Islamic Republic of Iran. The U.S. jumped at the opportunity to weaken the republic, which in 1979 had ousted one of the U.S.'s most loyal allies, the Shah. So the Iran-Iraq war became an opportunity for the U.S. not only to weaken the Islamic Republic and its anti-American leader, but also to prevent any communist influence that could enter the region as a result of losing a major ally. The U.S. gave aid, top-secret intelligence, and weapons to Iraq throughout the eight-year war. And to make things more complicated, some members of Ronald Reagan's administration were also facilitating the secret sales of arms to Iran during the 80s through Israel. The reason? To stay friendly with those in the Iranian government that seemed sympathetic to the U.S. Now, it was also during this time that the U.S. helped Iraq develop chemical weapons it later used against the country's Kurdish minority. And when the United Nations tried to sanction the Iraqi government for those abuses, it was the U.S. that blocked any action. Ultimately, the war claimed over 1 million Iraqi and Iranian lives. U.S. interest shifted once again when the Iraqi military invaded Kuwait in 1990. Iraq accused the oil-rich monarchy of stealing its petroleum and was coming to seize what it said was rightfully Iraq's. That didn't make America too happy. Kuwait was a major supplier of oil to the U.S. And the Saudis weren't too excited either. They not only shared the border with Iraq, but were also home to large oil reserves. The first Bush administration worried it wouldn't be too long until Iraq would want to invade Saudi Arabia. So, a U.S.-led coalition launched Operation Desert Storm in 1991, which consisted of 5 weeks of aerial assaults against the Iraqi military and civilian targets, followed by a ground operation. Meanwhile, the UN imposed harsh sanctions that crippled the Iraqi economy and claimed hundreds of thousands of lives, including a reported 500,000 children. Those sanctions lasted throughout the 90s, during the presidency of Bill Clinton, who vowed to remove Saddam Hussein from power. Clinton imposed no-fly zones and military operations in Iraq. The goal was, apparently, to protect the Kurds and Shia Muslims and isolate Saddam to weaken him. But the opposite actually happened. Saddam was able to consolidate his power in the face of foreign aggression. So by the time the 2003 invasion of Iraq happened, the United States had already been at war more or less with Iraq for more than a decade. And while the reasons for the invasion ranged from so-called weapons of mass destruction to the gift of democracy,
we have no ambition in Iraq except to remove a threat and restore control of that country to its own people.
Many speculated from the get-go that the real reason was, again, about Iraq's oil. And instead of finding WMDs, the U.S. found itself in a quagmire it couldn't control. And instead of democracy, the U.S. gave Iraqis a civil war, a broken economy, the Abu Ghraib prison, unaccountable private contractors, sectarian strife, and hundreds of thousands dead. America also dissolved the Iraqi army, creating a vacuum of up to 300,000 armed and unemployed men, many of whom would go on to join and build ISIS. The same ISIS that President Barack Obama is now trying to degrade and destroy through bolstering U.S. military presence, once again, in Iraq.
Our objective is clear. We will degrade and ultimately destroy ISIL.
So with decades of U.S. military involvement in their country bringing little good, is it really a surprise that so many young Iraqis are just fed up?
Just keep in mind, imagine how you would feel if you had a sectarian society where there was tolerance for all forms of religion, Christian, Jewish, Sunni, Shia. Women had roles. Women could work in any position. Yes, you had a really bad apple as heading the country, but you don't blame the entire population of a country. You don't give cumulative punishment because of the acts of a small core of people. Look at it today. In most areas, including in Baghdad, they're lucky to have more than 3 to 4 hours of electricity a day, and in some days they don't have any. So I think it's important we learn some lessons before we repeat it over and over again. Let's say hello to Roland from Long Island. Your turn.
Ronald.
Ronald, sorry.
A while back, you had mentioned that the father of Ted Cruz, Rafael Cruz, was in a photo with Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, Donald Trump merely had said that he had seen the photo. He did not imply that Rafael Cruz was involved in the JFK assassination, although the media did seem to imply that's what Trump meant. But in any case, could you just say something more about any information you might have about this matter?
Okay. I did not imply that Ted Cruz's father was associated with the JFK assassination. What I did say, and this was with Danny Sheehan, who probably knows more about the truth of the John F. Kennedy assassination than anyone else, because he interviewed directly Marcellus, who was the head of the organized crime down in Louisiana, and he admitted that there was a committee of 15 assassins, and a man named Shackley oversaw all of them and would become the most decorated person in the history of the CIA, and also had been at Operation Phoenix in Vietnam. He had been sent into other countries to help destabilize a regime change. In any case, there is Cruz with Lee Harvey Oswald. The question is, why? What would Cruz's father and Oswald have in common? We don't know. So instead of making a declaration of what we don't know, we should start to ask, who can provide us with some background on why they were together? And that's what we're in the process of doing now. We have put some questions out to some of the people who were alive then, who are alive today, and including one woman who knew all about that, who was Lee Harvey Oswald's lover. And we have a message out to her. Can she give us input? As soon as I get that input, if it can be qualified, then I'll share it with you. Outside of that, it's just one of those unusual pictures. I'm Gary Knoll. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.
The moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup,
I say a little prayer for you.
Walk home in my hair now, I'm wondering what dress to wear now. I say a little prayer for you. Forever and ever, you say in my heart, how it must be to live without you would only mean heartbreak for me.
Ooh. I run for the bus, dear. While riding, I think of us, dear.
I say a little prayer for you.
At work, I just take time. And all through my coffee break time,
I say a little prayer for you.
But you, please love.